Hello and welcome to another episode of Copper's Corner. I'm Copper Kelly, and you're welcome as always to the podcast where we talk music history. This week, I'm joined by none other than Mark Bulger from the Star Comedy Democrats. Say hello, Mark. How are you getting on?
Nice one. Hey, thanks, Copper, for having me here. It's great to be part of this show.
Yeah.
Looking forward to talking a bit about Rory Gallagher and finding out some more details.
That's it. And we're actually recording in Lindwick Studios, Mark's studio today. Yeah. But yes, Mark, you're in Star Comedy Democrats. Why don't you let the people know who you are and what the band is about?
So Star Comedy Democrats, three-piece band, guitar, bass, drums, doing a rocky kind of style music, kind of 90s influence with a bit of pop in there as well.
Yeah, Pearl Jam, heavily influenced.
Pearl Jam, Nirvana, then a bit of the post-grungy kind of era, I suppose, as well. Bush, Cedar, and a few more like that, lean towards them growing up with a lot of that music. Mm. Especially like the kind of nice strong melodic choruses and a lot of them as well,
Yeah.
So yeah, that's kind of what we're doing. So we had this year was our first releases really. So we had our EP out at the start of the year.
Imitation Road.
Yeah. That was January, I think, 2021. I think that came out.
Yeah. My memory's gone now for time. Yeah. Time relation is gone.
Yeah. You have very little reference for time these days now, don't you know? It's hard to remember exactly when things happened, but so after we released that one, then we kind of between lockdowns we were recording, came back into the studio, and then we released Roll the Dice. It was a follow up single to that one. We shot that video with Declan Colfer, and yourself is in it. Yeah, one and only.
Oh yes, I'm a poker dealer.
You're the dealer in that one. Yeah, the dealer's show.
Mm, that's a good video if anyone wants to check it out.
This one.
We were shooting one last night.
Yeah, we were. Our upcoming single on the 12th of November is coming out as well. Yes, that was a good old fun video shoot last night again.
Yeah.
Again with Declan Colfer as well and yourself. So yeah, looking forward to that one coming out.
Yeah.
It should be fun.
Definitely. Go check out the Star Comedy Democrats if you can. Where can people find you on Instagram and Facebook?
StarComedyDemocrats.com. There's a link to all our social media on that. On most of them, we are just / Star Comedy Democrats. I think there's only one that we aren't, and I can't remember which one that is, but the link tree on our website has all of them.
Brilliant. I'll put that link tree in the show notes, nice. Show description anyway. Absolutely. But today we're going to be talking about the Irish guitar legend, Rory Gallagher. I suppose you picked Rory. Why did you pick Rory? How is he a big influence on you?
I started working in a music shop, I'd say when I was about, 15 or 16 or something like that. And I had Rory Gallagher playing in there quite a bit. And I just kind of fell in love with him in there at that stage. Yeah. And then, of course, working in the music shop, you had access to all the instruments. So you had like a glorious Fender Stratocaster there. You had any amp that Rory used, any stage, any pedal. So you got to play through them all. When I was getting more into him playing in there, like when I was finishing work on Saturdays, coming home, stick on Rory Gallagher for a few hours, play along with the tracks, then head out into the town for the night.
Yeah.
And so, that was... very good learning experience, trying to keep up with some of the stuff he does. You can't keep up with it, but you can get close enough, make it your own. Never play anything like he does, he's crazy.
No, definitely. He's a one in a million kind of guitarist.
Oh yeah, 100%. What a dude. He's just watching some of the live shows and stuff there in the last little while as well. Just to go back over some of his stuff. Like we have some of the DVDs inside there as well. Just watch them playing. I don't know how he manages to play the way he did.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's like an extension of himself. I know it's like a bit of a cliche to say it's an extension of
your person, in this case.
It is, very true.
Absolutely. And I think the first time I ever heard Rory Gallagher was I got some sort of compilation CD from a paper.
Oh, yeah.
I can remember papers used to have CDs.
Like the Sunday World or something like that.
Yeah, one of those. And it came with like Best of Irish Rock.
Yeah.
And Bad Penny was like the second song.
And
I was like, what is this song? This is amazing. I absolutely loved it. And then sure, we've jammed it plenty of times.
Oh, yeah.
And in the open mics, we used to do open mic nights in Thomastown.
Eddie Murphy's in Thomastown, yeah. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah, we must have played that song together hundreds of times, did we?
Yeah, it must have. It's one of those easy songs it's not easy either, but it's just, it's a nice casual song to pick up and just jam out with people. Everyone kind of figure it out.
And like you said there as well, being number two on the Greatest Irish Rockets on that compilation CD, it's one that everybody knows around. Exactly. Ireland as well.
Yeah.
Anybody that plays music generally kind of like, yeah, let's play that tune.
That's it, that's it. I suppose we'll get started into Rory's history.
Yeah, let's do it.
He was born in Ballyshannon, County Donegal, on March the 2nd, 1948. And his father was employed up there in Donegal at a hydroelectric power plant by the Erne River. But then shortly after that, I think the father finished his contract or whatever it was at the hydro mill, and they all moved down to Cork City. On the south of Ireland. So he's kind of, he's known for those two places, Ballyshannon and Cork. They kind of claim.
Both of them claim, don't they? Yeah. Both of them, they 100% like, no, he's 100% from our place.
Yeah. And it doesn't say when he was, it was shortly after his birth. So he's kind of born in Donegal and grew up pretty much in Cork.
Yeah.
But sure, Ballyshannon have the big statue, big Rory Gallagher statue up there, and they have the festival then every year as well. And last year's was cancelled, unfortunately. But this year's is going on, actually no, next year's. Yeah. It's going the 2nd to 5th of June, 2022. And I passed through Donegal one time, or I was on like a family holiday, and we passed through Ballyshannon.
All right.
But we didn't stop because we were on the way up to, I don't know where we're going, but I just see all the crowds and, oh, this looks great. And like, trying to, you know, begging dad just pull over and we stop for a while. And no, he'd not into music anyway. So I was like, oh, just keep going. I was like, oh, watching it go by. It looked like great crack. But you were at it yourself as well.
Yeah. Probably. When was it? When did we go? 2018 maybe? So there was a festival in Thomastown as well for years on the same weekend. And we'd usually been involved in bands playing in that.
Yeah.
Called Happy Valley Festival. So it was kind of taken up, that weekend was taken up with that down here. So I missed getting to go for a good few years.
Yeah.
I finally got to go to it up. I think it was 2018 we went to it. It was great. We left it a bit too late, so we couldn't stay in Ballyshannon itself. So we stayed in Donegal town, but
couldn't find the place.
It was just well booked out. But I think it was only like 30 minutes away, so it was grand. Up there, just music all over the streets.
Yeah.
Music in bars, music. Then they had the big top as well, of course, for like the official sort of thing where you buy tickets, but all the music on the street and in the pubs, free to go to.
Yeah, and every single corner, someone playing.
Yeah. Oh, I couldn't believe it. When we got the taxi into town, like the, even just driving down to, was it the bus station you dropped us off on or something like that? We drove past probably, I'd say, about 10 or 15 different setups of people playing. Oh, it's unbelievable.
That's class. All right. Yeah. I'd love to go up now again. Well, yeah. Next year or whatever. After he moved to Cork, I suppose at the age of 9, he became fascinated with American blues and folk singers. Yeah. So he listened to a lot of Lead Belly, Buddy Guy, Freddie King, Albert King, Muddy Waters, John Lee Hooker. So he kind of heard that and he got hooked on it.
Yeah.
Hookered on it.
Hookered on it.
And so he always tried to mix kind of simple country and blues into his recordings as well. But he was... 1950s, Cork. He's growing up, and he had no record player at home.
Yeah.
But then he discovered Elvis.
Oh right,
that's a lot of young singers, especially a lot of singers we cover on this show, discover Elvis, and they go, "Okay, that's what I want to do."
Yeah.
he went to seek out the other guys, John Lee Hooker's, Muddy Waters, and stuff. And he got he says himself, "The more I heard, the more I got addicted." And at this stage then, he was already a kind of a local talent winning star, and he had a cheap guitar. As we all start off, we all had a little cheap. My first guitar was out of Argos. But then, do you want to tell about the famous guitar, how he came across and got the guitar?
Oh, his famous Stratocaster.
Mm.
Yeah.
Fender Stratocaster, yeah.
That was, it was in a music shop in Cork. I can't remember the name of it now. The Strat was in there secondhand. Rumoured to be saying it's the first Fender Stratocaster ever in Ireland.
Mm.
So I think someone from one of the show bands had it for like a year or something like that, and he traded it in.
Yeah.
And then Rory was, I think, was it Buddy Holly? He wanted a Buddy Holly guitar.
Must have, yeah.
So seeing that in the window in the shop, £100 back in the day. There's a few interviews and stuff where he's talking about it, and he's saying justifying spending that much money on an instrument back then, you know. It's like just saying that you can play rhythm and lead on this thing, so I don't need a second guitar player. I can make twice the money when I'm touring, so.
Makes sense.
Yeah. Definitely justifies buying the Strat.
Yeah. That's £100 now today would be, what, 1,500 euros?
I think it's about 1,500 bucks, yeah, today, yeah. In today's money.
But the same price as a new Strat today, I'd
yeah.
say, give or take.
Would be, yeah. It's, yeah, I must look into them. You know the Rory Gallagher signature Strat then as well?
There's
Have
the
you seen them?
Relict.
Yeah.
Strats, what, how much are they going for?
Oh, they're a couple of grand, I think, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
One of the guys around Kilkenny had one for a while.
Hmm.
Neil from Deep Down Detox, I think he had one for a little while.
Yeah, nice. Yeah, yeah.
Lovely oak. Very nice to play.
And of course, yeah, this guitar we're talking about, if you ever see Rory Gallagher playing live in a video, he's wearing this, he's rocking this kind of, it's a sunbursty, kind of a browny sunburst.
It was sunburst, yeah.
It was sunburst, that's the thing. It got, after years of sweat and corrosion from the sweat, all the paint starts kind of wearing off the different layers.
Yeah.
So you can see the wood in different parts and it's really, really relict, as they say, like
definitely.
Authentically relict
yeah.
in real time. And it's just, it's an iconic looking Fender Strat guitar. An
absolute workhorse of a guitar. Like you put it through so much. Look at this.
Yeah. As we go on later, he played like 300 gigs a year and this kind of stuff.
It's crazy, isn't it?
Yeah.
Bands doing that these days. Not a hope.
No. That's it, yeah. So, yeah, he got stripped by his own highly alkaline sweat. So maybe he had particularly corrosive sweat for this. But it became a kind of a iconic part of him, I suppose, as well.
It did, yeah. It became part of the whole look, didn't it?
Mm.
That Stratocaster.
Yeah. And in early 60s, there wasn't a whole lot of opportunities for, I suppose, a blues guitar player like Rory.
Mm.
So he ended up having to join your show band, your typical show band. And it's all very kind of... regimented dance sets and a different, it's a particular type of sound that he was, you know, obviously listening to later stuff, it didn't sound anything like the normal show band stuff from that era. So he would get up and he'd rock out a guitar solo, but then some promoters would kind of give out to him saying, hey, no, you can't be doing that stuff around here now, you have to play the show band country, you know, play the show band stuff. But people were kind of noticing him as well, just like, oh, what's this guy doing? It's a bit different.
Mm.
And he basically kind of saw playing in show bands as a kind of a stepping stone. And he said himself, he was only passing through.
Yeah, just passing kinda, through.
Yeah, just get out there, get experience on the road. And,
earn your chops.
Yeah, and maybe earn a little bit of money on the side.
Yeah.
Keep it going. So eventually he could get to play where he wanted to play. But then he went to Hamburg. In Germany, and he just kind of played his own stuff for a while.
Oh yeah.
And he kind of felt released, you could say.
Yeah.
He was kind of free from the shackles of a show band. So he's playing his own stuff, and he this kind of revitalized him at the time, because he probably would have been, what would you say, disillusioned by playing in a show band.
Yeah. That makes sense.
Yeah. So when he got home, then he put together Taste,
yeah.
Yes, trio, three members himself, and see the names are here somewhere. Yeah, bassist Eric Kitteringham, and drummer Norman Damery. That was the first iteration of Taste, formed in 1966. Would you have a lot of knowledge of Taste's?
Not really, a little bit. I know some of the songs, but mainly what I know is Rory's solo work afterwards. I always kind of found funny about Taste as well was, if you look at the promos from back in the day as well, sometimes they're called Taste, sometimes they're called The Taste.
Oh, okay.
There's a few.
didn't nail it down.
Yeah, I don't know if it was them choosing it or if it was just promoters that they assumed that there was a day in front of it, because that was a very big thing back then.
Putting day at the start band names.
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely, yeah.
So yeah, it's a strange one.
He was still only shy of his 20th birthday, so he formed Taste with Eric Kitteringham. Norman Damery, and he kind of added some folk, pop, and jazz elements to a kind of blues rock bass, featuring himself as the center, as the singer and the lead virtuosic guitarist. So he got a residency at London's Marquee Club in 1968, where I think John Lennon got a nice following back in the day before he got the Beatles and this kind of thing. And And this led to support slots with Cream and Blind Fate.
Yeah.
Cream is the Eric Clapton band,
of course, yeah.
Ginger Baker on the drums.
Yeah.
Feel someday I'll talk about that Ginger Baker guy. Did you ever see that documentary?
I didn't see the documentary, no, but you know, the name crops up everywhere.
Yeah, he's a character. He's a character.
Yeah.
But yeah, they released two studio albums, one in 1969, one in 1970, the second of which made the British top 20. And I think they did record another album after that. I think it was a live album.
Okay.
But they were kind of virtually unknown in the States. I think they went over a few times trying to break into the States, but they kind of didn't get it. But before anything could happen, really, management apparently tore the band apart.
All
sorts of disputes and arguments and
opinions
and such. And so the band imploded and they played their farewell show in Belfast, New Year's Eve, 1970. But this then led Rory to go out on his own, do a solo career, start his solo career. And in 1971, he released his first album, Polydor Records, in the UK. And it doesn't say the name of his first album now, but the second album he recorded was Deuce.
Deuce, yeah.
And recorded by Atlantic.
The first album was self-titled, was it?
Must have been.
Yeah.
Must have been. Ah, it is, yes. Yeah. Rory Gallagher. So yeah, off to a good start straight away with Rory Gallagher and Deuce. And are you very familiar with those albums? Or?
Yeah, I have them all inside. But I am terrible at remembering what songs are on what albums.
Yeah,
and
I am
absolutely terrible for that. Even records I've bought this year or last year, I couldn't tell you what songs are actually on them.
Yeah, I couldn't tell you what songs are on my own albums.
Yeah. I think, especially in the whole digital age now, it's very hard to keep track of what's on what. Back in the day, you had to
read the back of the CD and the liner notes and all, and you kind of imprinted it into your memory.
I said, yeah, you actually learned about everything. It's the iPods and MP3 players kind of kill that romantic side of things.
Disassociated with the music in a
definitely
way. That's true. And so he actually became known for playing up north during the Troubles, which of course were the how would you describe this now? Civil War
in Ireland, really.
Civil War, pretty much. Won't get into that too much. But the Troubles were, bad time up in the north. Catholics against Protestants. A lot of bands didn't travel to the north at all. And of course, you had the very bad case of the Miami show band. You heard of that?
I've heard of it before, but I don't remember it. Refresh me there.
Yeah, there's a show band traveling up north. I think they were from the south. But basically, I think they were pulled over by police, and someone said, there's a bomb in the van, but there wasn't.
Okay.
And I think they ended up getting shot. A few of them getting shot. The whole band, I think. I'll have to double check all that, but there's a documentary on Netflix about it. So even bands weren't safe, but Rory, he made an effort to actually go up there and people loved him for it. No one cared where he's from or anything, just wanted to hear the music.
Yeah.
And
it's a tough time to be going up there, all right.
Definitely. He always kept returning, giving hope and inspiration, and hope that other bands would kind of follow his lead and go up there as well. But Rory would later guest on albums by Belfast bands he directly inspired, including Energy Orchard and Stiff Little Fingers.
Stiff Little Fingers, yeah.
Yeah. And across the border up there in the north, across the border in the south.
Yeah.
He organized.
Gets confusing.
And he headlined and he organized Ireland's first outdoor rock festival at Croom, which is in Cork, I think, isn't it?
Croom's outside Cork, yeah.
Yeah. And he did that with his brother and manager, Donald.
Donald.
Mm. Yeah, his only brother, his only sibling. So he thought of music as being this kind of healing power, I suppose you could say. And he always had a kind of a suspicion of celebrity. He didn't want to be that name. So he just wanted to be a musician and go up and play some good music. And he actually says over here, he says, it seems a waste to me to work for years, really getting your music together and then make it big. Some people do. And then just turn into some sort of personality. You play less, you perform less, you circulate less. It becomes something completely different. So he He told that to Rolling Stone in 1972.
Yeah.
So he was all about keeping it real, wasn't he? Like,
yeah, definitely was. Even was the Irish Tour DVD as well from, I think, was that 74 or something like that? I think there's a scene in that as well where you're saying it's like he goes into a music shop and he's like, yeah, I don't want to be driving around in big fancy cars and have a mansion. Like, I just want to go downtown and buy a bar of chocolate or go and have a pint if I want to. And people come up to me and they're nice about it. I'll take the time and talk to them and that. But I don't want to be, an untouchable celebrity and living a life like that, you know?
Yeah, no one wants that anyway.
No.
Well, I suppose some people do.
Let's not talk about them.
Yeah. But yeah, he kept going, putting out albums. He followed up Juice with Live in Europe, 1972, and then Blueprint, and then Tattoo, both in 1973.
Yeah.
So he's pumping them out this
stage. Yeah, definitely is. There's definitely one song we know is on Tattoo. That's one you can always remember because it's Tattooed Lady.
Yeah.
I hope it's on that one now after saying it.
I think there is a song called Tattoo and then there's Tattooed Lady.
Yeah.
It's a different song, I think, but hopefully it's on the same album.
Yeah.
But yeah, Tattooed Lady is a great song. And where are we? So he did a good job of capturing the excitement of his live shows on tape with Live in Europe. And he followed that with Calling Card for Chrysalis Record Company in 1976. And then Photo Finish and Jinx for the same label in 78 and 1982, respectively.
Yeah.
So he's getting them out, heavy and fast.
Yeah, I was watching something there recently as well about, it wasn't specifically about Rory, I don't think, it was about just bands back then and when they were traveling around, that they used to just write on the road constantly, get back home when they have a couple of months off, go in and record the next album, get back out and hit the road again.
That's it, the cycle of touring an album and touring an album, what you want. But yeah, he definitely preferred a kind of the real sound.
Yeah.
To, I suppose, a lot of studios at the time were kind of getting early versions of digital gear coming in. So it wouldn't have sounded great. Not as good as digital sounds
nowadays,
today.
Yeah.
But he definitely, he always wanted that good vintage ethnic sound. So he liked tape.
Yeah.
Recording to tape, playing through a proper amp, tube amplifier. And just him and his guitar and the amp onto tape. No funny business.
It comes across really well though, doesn't it? When you listen to the live versions as well.
Yeah.
You know, they're very like the studio versions.
That's it, yeah.
There's no hiding behind crazy effects or mad overdubs or loads of edits.
Yeah.
You're getting what you're getting. That's it.
That's it.
You have to be a proper player to be playing back in those days.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. There's no, very unforgiving.
Yeah, exactly.
Recording today is very, very forgiving. You can stop and start and cut out sections and do this and that and the other. But yeah, he didn't like that. He wouldn't have liked that today if he was still around. He wouldn't have.
Yeah. Wouldn't have. Imagine him liking that either.
Being this way with his sound, going for an authentic sound, he actually endeared him to one Bob Dylan.
Oh.
Who actually came to a show. He was a backstage visitor in 1978.
Yeah.
In LA. But apparently he was trying to get in and I think one of the bouncers didn't recognize him and just turned him away. Hey man, I'm Bob Dylan. But he came back. Somehow he got in anyway, so he came back to stage and visited Rory Gallagher.
Oh yeah.
And
must have found a bouncer that was into folk music.
must have. And so at this point in the late 70s, he would have been going 300 gigs
a year.
And it's 365 days in a year. Oof. So he was nearly every day, pretty much.
Yeah. Must end up being like a day off a month or something like that.
Maybe.
Two days off a month.
Yeah, something like that.
It's crazy.
Yeah. And then Christmas time, he was famous for his rural Ireland tours.
Oh, yeah.
Which kind of made him legendary, apparently.
Yeah.
People loved it.
That's it. You wouldn't have had much people coming to those places back in the day.
No.
And he's making the effort to go there. And everyone, just loved you for it.
That's it, yeah.
Yeah.
And he had several world tours by this stage as well. He had 25 American tours. But then I think it must have got to him and he took a few years of rest from the road then.
Yeah.
So this would have been late 70s, early 80s. But then due to life on the road, would have been drinking a lot and would have had to have taken different prescription medications. Apparently it was starting to really affect his health. So that's you know, a big part of the reason why he took the rest from touring. So apparently he was starting to swell up a bit.
Yeah, well, you can really see that in some of the live videos.
Yeah, absolutely. And he says himself, blues is bad for your health. And it's as simple as that. It goes with the territory.
Yeah.
So being a blues musician is just not good for your health.
If you want to stay healthy, don't play the blues.
Don't play the blues. But yeah, he was prematurely and noticeably aging.
Yeah.
Yeah, unfortunately. But he decided to break away then from a major label and set up independently. But he became less prolific in his recordings because I think he started to become more agonized over his recordings and probably, you know, getting more precise with, oh, I don't want to play that note or play this note and this kind of thing, probably to some extent. So he didn't
more perfectionism, like.
Perfectionism, that's what I was looking for, yeah. And he was less prolific, but then he released Defender and then Fresh Evidence, which was actually the last release before his death. And that was released on 1991 on Capo label. But Capo was his own.
It was his own label, yeah.
Yeah. He set it up and it was a publishing company. He basically, the idea was to set this company up, this record label up, and expose other great blues musicians that wouldn't have seen the light of day otherwise.
That was kind of falling out of favor at that stage, wasn't it? Big time, so.
Yeah. That's the thing with music.
Yeah.
Some decades, it might be a certain, like, the 70s would have been big for disco and so on, and things just chop and change. And
yeah, you used to bring in that big shotgun snare.
Yeah. but yeah, blues was kind of falling out of favor, maybe, yeah. So his dedication to music was absolute, this article says. He had no wife, he had no long-term relationship, no children. So he kind of kept himself on the road. Some people probably say he's better off for that.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a individual choices, really.
That's it.
Isn't it?
Yeah. So he was kind of tied to his life on the road. He obviously had touring so much. But yeah, he went back on the road again after, I think, Fresh Evidence released in 91. And he, spent a bit more time gigging. And he also spent a lot of time living in a hotel overlooking Chelsea Harbour.
In London?
I think, it's to say, I think probably Chelsea Harbour. I'm not sure where that is, to be honest with you.
Yeah.
Be in London, yeah. It's in England anyway, somewhere.
Part of London is called Chelsea.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, yeah, we'll go with that.
We'll go with that, yeah. Please feel free to write in and correct us if you need. Yeah. but yeah, apparently he literally played until he dropped.
Mm.
He was playing in Rotterdam in the Netherlands in January 95 and he collapsed on stage.
Yeah.
Yeah. So he's hospitalized in London with liver failure. So he collapsed in Rotterdam and somehow made it back to London and then went to the hospital. It's a bit strange. But
I think he was prescribed stuff in Rotterdam, was it?
Just to keep him going.
And he was sent back over, yeah.
Yeah.
He went back over to London then, I think, yeah.
Yeah.
As he went in there, yeah, that's when they realized liver failure, I think, was in London.
Must have been, yeah. That's a hard thing to be. And obviously, he was a big drinker, you know.
Yeah.
Would have drank a good bit. Different for the drinks, as I say.
Yeah.
So he went back to London and he was hospitalized with liver failure. But he had a successful liver transplant operation and he seemed to be recovering.
Yeah.
But unfortunately, he caught an infection and he died on the 14th of June, 95, aged just 47.
It's it with those kind of transplants, isn't it? Yeah, they can be seen to be working and just brings your immune system down if something, other infection gets in there.
Something, a small thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. 47 years old, huh?
47. Yeah. But when he had his funeral in Cork, 15,000 people.
15,000.
Lined the streets to say goodbye to him.
Yeah.
Unreal. But yes, after he died, they released a posthumous album in 2003, which was Wheels Within Wheels. And it focused on his acoustic side.
Yeah.
Collaborations with Martin Carty, Bert Jantz, Nonny Donegan, Juan Martin, perhaps he's a flamenco legend. Juan Martin, and also the Dubliners.
The Dubliners.
Yes, I haven't actually heard this album. Do you know this album too well at all?
I know one or two tracks off it from one of like, you know, the Essentials kind of albums that they'll put those kind of things on.
Yeah.
But I don't think I have that one actually.
That's it. Yeah.
Yeah.
So let's give it a go. As always, I create a Spotify playlist for this podcast. So I kind of put music from bands we talk about into the Spotify playlist and music from the guests. So you'll see Star Comedy Democrats in there as well. So make sure to go to our social media and get the link to that Spotify playlist. But Gallagher is commemorated throughout Ireland. There's a bronze statue, as we said earlier on, in Ballyshannon.
Yep, been at that one.
And there's a sculpture in Cork.
Been at that one.
Where the local theatre is named after him.
Yeah.
You're at that. There's a mounted guitar in Dublin.
Yeah.
You're at that.
I have pictures, I think, of all of these somewhere in the house.
Is that the one? It's on a wall outside
I've seen
this in Temple Bar somewhere.
Is it Temple Bar? I have no idea what street names in Dublin. I get so confused up there.
Yeah, I couldn't tell you exactly, but I think it's near Temple Bar. It's up on the outside of a building.
Yeah.
Just high enough that you can't reach it, I think. And there's a plaque in Belfast, probably commemorating the fact that he went up and played during the Troubles and no one else did.
I was only up in Belfast 2 months ago.
That's right, yeah.
Yeah, so that's when I got that picture.
Well, you're at that as well. Yeah. See where you went to everything.
Yeah.
And... yes, and his famous guitar, the Strat, has been basically replicated and Fender sell the tribute model.
Oh, yeah.
And they still sell it to this day outside, do they?
I think so, yeah. We briefly touched on that earlier.
Yeah.
I think they still do, yeah. Up to a couple of years ago, at least, they definitely were still selling it.
Mm. That would have been cool, all right? Cool to get one of those. And of course, it'll look like it's old and worn like Rory's, but it would have been done. Wouldn't mean
the custom shop. I think do them in Fender. I think it's custom shop. Is it? I'm not sure.
Say so. Yeah, because that'd be some relicking job to do that properly.
Yeah,
to get it looking good.
So that's it. I remember. Was there a video on that or an interview or something like that where?
Yeah.
One of the guys in Fender was talking about Donald was sent over the guitar, and they were talking to the process of taking it apart. Doing all the measurements of everything that they have there and measuring the pickups, measuring everything. Yeah. So they could replicate it properly. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a very interesting read, actually. Let's go back and find that one.
And it says here as well, some of Gallagher's best work on record wasn't actually under his own name. He also recorded with Muddy Waters one time on the album The London Session, 1972.
Yeah.
Also, he recorded with Albert King on just the album called Live. 1977. And his last US tour was 91. That's it. He was a big inspiration for other guitarists as well. Most notably Eric Clapton from Cream, who he played with back in 68, I think it was.
Yeah, late 60s, early 70s, was it?
Must have been, yeah. And Eric Clapton credits Gallagher with getting me back into blues.
Oh, no way.
He said the Rolling Stones also tried to get him to replace Mick Taylor as a guitarist in the Rolling Stones. So he could have actually joined the Rolling Stones for some reason.
I remember that. Yeah. Isn't there some story about that where did he go to an audition or something like that? And somebody showed up late. So he had to go. I can't remember exactly what it was. There was some
timing issue that kind of...
There was something funny about it,
Yeah. So he's also a big influence on others like Slash, Guns N' Roses, Johnny Marr, U2's Edge, and Brian May from Queen. So big influence of a lot of people.
You could end up talking about somebody, one of them in one of your podcasts now as well,
Definitely, down the line.
I'm sure there'll be a lot of people that are influenced or Rory influenced that you'll end up talking about.
Absolutely. And I suppose the last quote, last nice thing we'll add to this is Jimi Hendrix.
I think I know what's coming here.
Yes. Jimi Hendrix, the guitar god for a lot of people. He was asked by Rolling Stone one time, what's it feel like to be the greatest guitarist in the world? And he turns around and goes, I wouldn't know. You'd have to ask Rory Gallagher.
He wasn't lying.
Game recognizes game.
Yeah, definitely.
That kind of wraps up our history of Rory Gallagher. Do you have anything else you want to add? Any saucy stories or anything like that?
Yeah, things will come to me as we start talking. Things will come to me. One of the things what we were talking about earlier on, like when I started kind of playing along with some of Rory's records and things like that. What song is it? Brute Force and Ignorance, I think. There's a harmonic guitar bit in that right before it kicks into the chorus, I think. And he's bending harmonic notes high.
Mm.
I was like baffled by it when I was listening to it. I was like, how am I supposed to do this? Because like, even if you have a strat set up for a little bit of upbending, say on harmonics,
yeah,
you're not going to get as far as he was going. So I was trying to figure out how he was doing it. Go looking up some live performances, trying to find the song, what's he doing? Like, yeah, so plays harmonic notes and then bending strings up behind the nut.
Yeah.
Just like you're watching them do anything, you know, you'll get so many ideas for different things you can try yourself.
You're such like an innovator on guitar.
Yeah. And like that ended up, when we were doing Imitation Road then as well, that kind of ended up, there was, I ended up playing like an open string at one section, but I wanted it to bend up and I couldn't do it on the guitar I was using. So I was like, oh, use Rory's old trick.
Yeah.
Finger up behind the nut and bend the string down so it goes up. Yeah.
Trick for you.
Yeah.
So that's an absolute direct influence.
Yeah. Rory. Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. So that's actually on Imitation Road.
Perfect.
Song on Imitation Road.
Yeah.
Easier than that one.
Brilliant.
Yeah.
But look, we'll bring this episode to a close, I suppose.
Yeah.
I want to thank Mark.
Thanks very much for having me.
For coming on. Absolutely. And he's, of course, Star Comedy Democrats is his band name.
Yeah.
And he has his own studio here at Lindwick Studios, where he graciously allowed me to record. And I record vocals for my tracks and different guitar tracks and stuff here as well.
Hopefully we'll be getting more done now that we're all allowed to be in person again. Now exactly. We can start working properly together again.
Yeah, definitely. And tell the people again where they can find your band.
Yeah, you can check us out on starcomedydemocrats.com and you'll get a link to all our social media, YouTube channels and all that from there. So there's links to Spotify and Bandcamp and all that as well. So you'll see links to videos and you'll hear some music. So give us a like and follow if you're into it.
That's it, yeah. And make sure to follow them because you'll see their new video coming very shortly.
Oh, yeah.
That's good crack. I might appear at a cameo. I don't know if we make the edit or the final cut. We'll see how we go.
We'll have to see how the cut goes, yeah. But yeah, that should be out mid-November-ish.
Yes.
The single is being released on the 12th of November. So the video will be following, I think, maybe like a week later.
Yeah.
So yeah, keep an eye out for that one.
That's it. And actually, before I go, I want to say that we do have a Patreon for the podcast. If you do want to help support the podcast, I will be putting up bonus stuff eventually over the coming weeks. I have to figure out what I want to do as a bonus, or even let me know what you'd like to hear as a bonus. Mm. But we do have a subscriber, a fellow we do know ourselves, both Brian O'Connor.
Hi.
From the Concerts That Made Us podcast. He's our, very grateful to him for being our first patron.
Nice.
And I also want to give a special shout out to a listener over in America that's been listening since episode one and getting in touch with me a lot. It's Donna Miller. And her mother, her 95-year-old mother as well, that listened to us.
Nice.
And Donna, she likes to look into her genealogy.
So okay.
She looks into her past and she likes to see who she's related to in terms of famous musicians and things.
Okay.
So she's been writing me great messages telling me who she's related to and stuff. And I'll get it all together and I'll probably read it out at some point in one episode coming up. But thanks to Donna and her mother. And also thanks again to Brian for signing up for the Patreon. And if you do like what I'm doing here, please do consider, because as I always say, keeps the wheels a turning, the fires are burning.
Yes.
And go support what Mark is doing over there in Star Comedy Democrats as well. And it's really, obviously, it's very important to help independent bands kind of get out there and get heard and stuff. But thanks again, Mark.
Nice one. Thanks very much, Copper.
Thank you very much. And we'll see you all again next week. All the best. Bye-bye.